This is Session 105, Yisker Books, Weblogs and Ethnic Cleansing, Grassroots Documentation and New Technologies. I'm the session chair, Stephen Naren. I'm an archivist at the Fortunoff Video Archive for Holocaust Testimonies. I'd like to thank Molly Wheeler and Nicholas Fox Weber at the Joseph and Annie Albers Foundation for making this session possible by providing some funding for our two speakers. Our speakers today will be Rosemary Horowitz, Associate Professor of English at Appalachian State University, and Andras Riedelmeyer, Bibliographer in Islamic Art at the Documentation Center of the Aga Khan Program for Islamic Architecture at Harvard University. Rosemary has researched, written, and published several works on Yisker Books, Jewish Culture, Literacy, and Memory. She will be participating in a seminar on Yisker Books at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, and her presentation will describe the characteristics of Yisker Books as a prime example of grassroots efforts to document communities destroyed by genocide. Our second speaker, Andras, has written dozens of articles and presented many papers on Bosnian cultural heritage and its destruction during the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. He also served as an expert witness in the war crimes trial of Slobodan Milosevic at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. His presentation, will focus on the Bosnian website's online memorials to communities that were targeted by Serbian aggression during the Balkan Wars. If time allows, the speakers will be happy to answer any questions you may have at the end of the session. But before we begin, I would just like to add a brief comment. Since the subject matter of these two presentations may seem a bit esoteric to some, I understand that Yisker Books as small press publications and videotaped testimonies of Holocaust survivors, web pages, all fall into a gray area somewhat outside the scope of the archivist's most traditional definition of the record. But from the perspective of documenting marginalized and oppressed social constituencies, these efforts have a relevance that cuts to the heart of many of the issues with which the archival profession has been struggling for decades. Yisker Books, Holocaust video testimonies, and Bosnian weblogs represent just three points on a continuum of a very specific genre of documentation in which local communities employing current available technologies, i.e. the book, videotape, the internet, make a collective effort to preserve for posterity the memory of that which was lost as a result of genocidal campaigns. Unfortunately, as the crisis in Rwanda and Kosovo and Darfur show us, this is a genre that will continue to recast itself in new forms. Thus, the past iterations of this genre are worth exploring in greater detail, as they will help us, as archivists, librarians, museum professionals, to anticipate what our future roles may be as the keepers of this documentation. And with that, I'll turn it over to Rosemary.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. I have a couple extra handouts if anybody would like.
Okay. To begin, there are three words I have to first define for you. The first word is Yisker, which is a Hebrew word that means memorial service. Memorial prayer. I'm sorry, memorial. The second word is Landsleit, which is a Yiddish word that refers to people from the same geographic area or hometown. And the third word is Landsmannschaft, and that refers to mutual aid organizations comprised of Landsleit, people from the same hometown. So I'll be using these words throughout the course of my conversation. It's actually also in the title as well. So I want to sort of define them for you first. So let me begin with a little history of the Yisker books and then focus on one particular case example to show you how these memorial books have changed over time. During the 1940s, Jews in the United States, Israel, Argentina, and elsewhere started publishing commemorative volumes, known as Yisker books, to their Eastern European hometowns. One bibliography shows that 25 books were published in the 1940s, 117 in the 1950s, 188 in the 1960s, 180 in the 1970s, 65 in the 80s, 37 in the 90s, and beyond. So you see, it's kind of an ongoing effort. Although some books were published by individuals, many were published by landslides, right? Groups of people from the same hometown who used their affiliation in their landsmanschaften, the mutual aid organizations, to compile a volume to the life and death of the Jewish hometown. Articles in the books were originally written in Hebrew and Yiddish. And as a consequence, over time, of course, the Israeli-born descendants of the Eastern European Jews could read the Hebrew sections, but not necessarily the Yiddish ones. And the American-born could usually not read either section. So as a remedy, a number of individuals and organizations sponsored English translations of the original works. So I'm going to get to that later as well. And so along with the inability of the descendants to read the books, the scarcity of books emerged as another problem. Since the book orders were originally placed by the landslide for themselves and their families, extra copies of the books were not generally available. But with the growing public interest in the books, then a shortage of copies developed. New technologies provided solutions to these shortages, and the Jewish Genealogical Society's electronic database of Yisker books, and the New York City Public Library and the National Yiddish Book Center's virtual library of books are examples of new media solutions, and I'll talk about those a little bit later. So my studies of Yisker books have shown that their uses, their meanings, their language, and their forms have undergone significant changes over the year. So the goal of my talk today with you is to focus on the Yisker books and all the iterations of the books dedicated to the town of Pietrzyków Trybunalski, Poland, in order to explore matters related to the continuity and change in the genre. So I'd like you now to turn to the handouts. And on the first page, then, I've given the general definition of the Yisker books. And these are the Yisker books that relate, written by landsmanschaften. There's other books we can talk about later, and that has that sort of influences matters of definition for archivists and libraries. So in the beginning, the functions of the Yisker books were primarily four. They were used as written monuments, written legacies, chronicles about the town, and bonds between landslide and their descendants. So we'll see over time, using the example of Pietrzyków book, how some of these functions have changed. So now the focus on the Pietrzyków versions. The first Pietrzyków version of the Yisker book began in 1952 in Israel. That year, Pietrzyków was living in Israel, decided to publish a memorial book to the town and its surroundings. 13 years later, in 1965, they published their Hebrew and Yiddish volume, which is entitled Pietrzyków Trybunalski v. Hasaviva, Pietrzyków Trybunalski and its surrounding area. And so that's the first book, the citation that's given on the chronology, the 1965 Hebrew and Yiddish book. The book's editors, Jacob Maltz and Naftali Lau-Lavi, wrote that the book was considered a living memorial to a major Jewish community. So this book was published in 1965. The landslide put in their orders from around the world, and then that was the end of that original publication effort. But then in 1977, Americans wanted to have a copy of a book which we could read. So in 1977, Ben Giladi, who was the editor of the American Pietrzyków Landsmanschaft chapter's newsletter, started publishing articles and pictures from the Pietrzyków Trybunalski v. Hasaviva in his newsletter, American newsletter, The Bulletin. When he realized that his readers liked seeing that material, he thought about publishing a new Yisker book. As he says to me, I came up with an idea. Let's do something. Let's do a book, an extension to the Yisker book, and we can take from the bulletin material. That was the newsletter. He discussed his idea about an English version of the book with others, but progress was very slow, and he tried to enlist people to work with him. It was hard to convince those others, and by 1983, he considered publishing a book himself. Around that time, the children of Pietrakovers were starting to ask for an English version. So this is like the second generation now. So Giladi began working with American-born descendants of Pietrakovers, and then came in 1991, they published their English version of the book. The book's publication was financed primarily through the sale of eighth, quarter, half, and full-page tributes to friends and families who were killed during the Holocaust, what is called the necrology, and I'll talk more about that later. This necrology is the final section of the Yiddish, of the original Hebrew Yiddish book, and now also in the English version called a memorial scroll. So the necrology was a way to honor people who were killed, plus to finance the book, to raise money for the book. So in 1991, the English book, A Tale of One City, was edited and published by Ben Giladi and the Pietrinov Tribunalski Relief Association. That's the Landsmannschaft. So from 1965 to 1991, you see a generation. And so now the English book is available to American readers. Then, so that's the second sort of iteration of this memorial book. In the mid-90s, in response to a growing interest in the genre of Yisker books by readers who were generally unaffiliated with any Landsmannschaft, organizations primarily the National Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Massachusetts, along with the New York City Public Library, it was a joint effort, as well as the Jewish Genealogical Society, started producing new media versions of the Yisker books to make them more available. The National Yiddish Book Center and the New York City Public Library digitized versions of approximately 650 titles. That was the collection in the New York City Public Library, including the two Pietrakov books I talked about, the 1965 version and the 1991 version. These digitized versions were created with PHP software, imaging programs, library automation software, and other technologies. Currently, the online catalog in the New York City Public Library has listings Pietrakov, Trobanowski, V. Hasaviva, and A Tale of One City. However, A Tale of One City is not available in the digitized version because there's a regular print version available. So I wanted to show you what the New York City Public Library catalog for the Yisker books looks like, and that's the second page of the handout. You could, I just have the P page. And you could see the two Pietrakov Tybalnowski versions, the 1965 version and the 1991 version. When you click on the 1965 version, what you find, and that's the next page, is the sort of the online catalog entry. And it comes up this way, and it's really hard to read, but I'll get into that a little bit later in terms of reading. But what you see is that there's a link up at the right-hand corner of the page that says buy book. And what that leads you to the National Yiddish Book Center homepage, where you can demand, request a reprint on demand of the Pietrakov books. And I have one of those to show you. So from the New York City Public Library, there's a link to the National Yiddish Book Center where you can actually get a bound copy, because the online versions are very hard to read. And it's very hard to scroll through the pages. If you print a version, a page of the memorial book, Pietrakov, this is what you see. So the printed version by page doesn't include the sort of all the library screen extra links and stuff. Just want to show you what that looks like. So the library's instructions for reading, enlarging, and printing pages are provided on the library site, as I showed you. In addition, the library site is linked to the Book Center, where readers may order a reprint on demand of the two Pietrikov books. So that's one new media version addressing the shortage of the texts. By comparison, the Jewish Genealogical Society used a different sort of strategy to have online versions of their memorial books. They, using markup HTML markup language, database software, and scanning technology, the Genealogical Center created hundreds of versions of memorial books online, including A Tale of One City. The Pietrikov Tribunalskaya Hasaviva is not in the Jewish Genealogical Database, so just the English version, A Tale of One City. Volunteers from the Society scanned the entire front matter from A Tale of One City, along with about half of the chapters from the English onto the web, and link those text files to the JewishGen.org website. Each scanned chapter is linked to the book's table of contents, as well as to adjacent pages. A number of photographs from Tale of One City are also scanned and included as a separate link, and viewers may enlarge these thumbnail-sized photographs. And I included for you in this packet as well the page from the Jewish Gen site, the Yisker Book Project, and what the memorial book for Pietrikov Tabanowski looks like on the Jewish Gen website, and especially the part of how the table of contents is linked then to the text. So now what you see is, as a result of the efforts of the Landsmannschaft, the Jewish Genealogical Society, the National Yiddish Book Center, the New York City Public Library, the Pietrikov Tribunalskaya Yisker books are available in print and electronic formats. And so a media-specific analysis reveals that despite different changes, a number of generic functions have persisted. That's what I want to talk about with you now. And I've identified four ones that have functions that have shifted. So to start, the first. When they were written, the Pietrikov Tribunalskaya V. Hasaviva and A Tale of One City were considered monuments in print. The readers and writers were aware that Judaism requires the fulfillment of certain tasks for honoring the dead, including proper burial procedures following prescribed mourning rituals, reciting the mourner's prayer, and observing the anniversary of one's death. Since the survivors were unable to perform these traditional tasks for friends, families, and others who perished in the Holocaust, the books became a substitute gravestone. The numerous references to Jewish customs, for example, Yisker, memorial service, Matseva, gravestone, Yortzeit, the anniversary of a death, and Kaddish, the mourner's prayers, indicate the books fulfill these religious functions. The books serve as a group memorial, allowing the survivors to collectively commemorate their losses. But Judaism also couples the obligation to memorialize the dead with the obligation to affirm life, so honoring death and life simultaneously. Thus, a Yisker book is also a Sefer Chaim, a book of life, as has been pointed out in various reviews of the book. So the books have these dual functions. All the versions, the print versions and the electronic versions, retain the overall commemorative value of the book. However, there is one significant change to the commemorative function, and that change involves the necrology, the list of people who died I mentioned before. For example, the Pietrikov Tribunalskaya Hasaviva, the original 1965 version, contains 88 pages of names and pictures of deceased relatives and friends. The necrology in A Tale of One City, however, sort of charts a different course. Assuming that only Pietrikovers and their descendants would be interested in a list of names, Giladi, the editor, only included the memorial scroll, those lists of pages, in copies purchased by Pietrakovers. Copies purchased by others did not contain the list. And I learned that accidentally, by the way. I didn't know. I bought a version and then learned later when I went to the museum in Washington here that there was another version with the memorial scroll. The result is that there are two versions of A Tale of One City, one with the memorial scroll and one without. So the National Yiddish Book Center and the New York City Public Library digitized the one without the memorial scroll. And the Jewish Genealogical Society scanned the edition without the memorial scroll as well. So thus, neither of the new media versions of the English contains the list of names. But as a reprint, the National Yiddish Book Center and New York City Public Library's edition, 1965 edition, does include the original necrology. So without this necrology, the various versions of A Tale of One City do not act as a mitzeva, a gravestone. The effect overall is that the yisker aspect, the memorial aspect of the genre, at least for English readers, is diminishing. Without any personal connection to Pietrakov, current readers are more apt to view the memorial books as a source document about instead of a memorial to the place and its people. The second function. At the start, in addition to their use as a written monument, the books were considered written legacies from the Pietrakovers to their descendants. And in fact, because the original 1965 is such in short supply, the children of Pietrakovers are more likely to have a copy of A Tale of One City, the English version. Although Pietrakovers may not agree to the extent on which their children will value A Tale of One City, nevertheless, they see the book as a gift to their descendants. And furthermore, since few survivors have few, if any, actual items from home to give their children, A Tale of One City sort of serves as a possession, as an heirloom from the town that may be passed on to the second generation. Third, along with their value as an heirloom, the books have currency as artifacts to curators, archivists, and others. To study a text as an object is to acknowledge this meaning rests not only in its content, but in its structure and appearance. Of course, you know that. Graham notes that type, paper, page layout, page design, photographs, binding, and other physical aspects of text also supply information to readers. For example, the hand-drawn maps of the city in the memorial books yield insights into survivor memory. Similarly, the drawings of the Matseva and the Ne'er Tamid, the Eternal Light, in these versions give insights into the religious symbolism of the survivors. So technically, the reprints are not artifacts. And from that viewpoint, neither the National Yiddish Book Center or the New York City Public Library's digital version nor the Jewish Genealogical Society's HTML version may be classified as artifacts. They do not provide material evidence of the original text. Besides the importance of the original copies as artifacts, the items that were sort of assembled by the editor also have artifactual value. And the archives at the U.S. Holocaust Museum have a scrapbook of materials that Ben Gileadi used to put together the version of A Tale of One City. Besides their uses as monuments and legacies in print, the Lanzmann Shop-sponsored publication serves as bonds between Pietrakovers and their descendants. One of the editors mentions this directly when he says, the bulletin created a living bond between Pietrakover compatriots everywhere and was enthusiastically received by our people, as can be seen to the letters in the editor. With your remarkable work on the book, that's the Tale of One City, and the bulletin, the newsletter, you've earned an honored place in the survivor's history. You put people in touch with one another, regardless of distance. You inform us about different activities. You provide a forum to express thoughts and creative talents. So the books and the written publications provide a bond between Pietrakovers. And besides the printed materials, the internet also connects Pietra covers. Current editions of the Lanzmannschaft newsletter contains a new feature called Internet Outreach, which lists items of interest on the web. And one of the items of interest is a new creation of a new email list called the Jewish Pietrakov Online, where Pietrakovers may reminisce, quote, reminisce and raise historical and genealogical points about Jewish life in Pietrakov in messages which will automatically be forwarded to all members of on the list. And finally, the last function is that initially the two Yisker books also served as chronicles. For some readers, the books were considered a complete history of the city from its early Jewish life until the destruction of its Jewish population. The editors, for example, of the original 1965 version emphasized that by including a Geschichtliche calendar, a historical calendar, of Jewish Pietrakov in the book. The calendar lists significant events in the town from 1103 to 1953. In addition to this overview from the city, from its Jewish beginnings, there is an account of its destruction by the Nazis, and that was written and researched by the very famous Yad Vashem scholar, Joseph Kermisch. But although neither the historical calendar nor the historical summary is complete, this chronicle function, in addition to sort of laying out sort of the history of the town, also has a documentary aspect. The survivor testimonies in the books, serve as irrefutable eyewitness accounts of the destruction of Jewish Pietrakov. And that's been mentioned over and over again by different readers and writers of the book. In addition to the documentary aspect of the chronicle, besides serving as an account of the past and a documentary evidence of the destruction of Jewish Pietrakov, the Yisker books, for the original readers and writers, are also part of the ongoing story of Pietrakov Jewry. From that perspective, even though the Jewish life in Pietrakov is over, Pietrakovers and their descendants may be found elsewhere. A belief in the continuity of the community is implicit in the text. On the simplest level, the general arrangement of chapters suggests that continuity. For example, there are chapters covering the life before, the life during, and the life after the Holocaust, giving a linear perspective on the town. The writers clearly connect past, present, and future. They acknowledge the need to commemorate the town and memorialize it for their descendants, and yet the existence of the book gives eternal life to the town. The digitized versions of Pietrakov, Tribunalski, Viha Saviva, and A Tale of One City retain this chronicling function, sort of intact. By comparison, the HTML version of A Tale of One City expands that function greatly through the use of hypertext links. Specifically, the HTML version links A Tale of One City off the Jewish Gen page to Pietrakov Tribunalski Shtetl Link's homepage. That homepage connects the reader to additional links about information about Pietrakov, including maps, photographs, town histories, cemetery listings, camps, and all kind of other records. For example, the records link, there's information about the Mormon records, Polish records not indexed by the Mormons, and census information. Links then to research sources, genealogical databases, forums, and mailing lists are given. So all this greatly enhances and augments the original material. However, although the HTML, Tale of One City, extends the chronicling function well beyond the various print versions, it does not retain the structure of the original book. So since hypertext lets readers follow links in any number of ways, readers may overlook the book's linear arrangement. Thus, they may miss one of the intentions of the original editors, which is to emphasize the continuity of the community. To conclude, over time, some Yisker book functions have changed, some have endured. And I summarized this on the handout as well. The commemorative and documentation functions of the print and electronic versions have evolved. Without any personal connection to the place, current readers are more apt to view the books a source document instead of memorials. The changing nature of survivor documentation has been noted by others. For example, Annette Villavorkia observes that the purpose of testimony is no longer to obtain knowledge, as it was in the 40s and 50s. The mission that has devolved to testimony is no longer to bear witness to inadequately known events, but rather to keep them before our eyes. Testimony is to be a means of transmission to future generations. Thus, the testimony of survivor, the documentary function of the books, no longer fulfills its initial purpose of providing firsthand accounts. Instead, these accounts act as a vehicle for intergenerational communication. So that's sort of one change. Another change in the genre is that the electronic versions of the books do not function as artifacts. The reprints on demand and the HTML versions of the books do not supply information about the survivor community in an artifactual way, as, of course, do the originals. The chronicling function is expanded due to the use of hypertext. So overall, then, the Yisker books, which originally acted as memorials, chronicles, and heirlooms, currently primarily serve historic or genealogical purposes. The use of the books for group purposes is diminishing as the use of the books for individual purposes is increasing. The result is a shift from the collective to the personal use of the books. And as the books move into archives and libraries and away from the Landsmannschaft, this shift may also be seen as a move from the private to the public. And that then leads us to some of the issues that I see for librarians and archives and others, which we will talk about later. Issues having to do with collection development and actually definition of what is a Yisker book, because the definitions sort of vary, so there the numbers vary, so what is the collection? So the issue one is collections development. Another issue has to do with sort of the artifactual nature of the books. Reprints on demand are available, but they're not artifacts. What does that mean? And the third issue for archivists that I see, and I'm sure there's more, has to do with the electronic versions. How do you sort of understand what the HTML version is? How do you understand as that's the site develops? How to sort of think about and define those? So that's an overview about one set of memorial books dedicated to one town. And the Pietrikov book, like I said, has gone through a lot of the iterations in the genre. So it kind of offers a good case example to look at and sort of tease out some of these issues and changes. Thank you very much.
One second, please.
All right. From the particular to a somewhat broader view of memorial books, if we think about it, the memorial book is derived from a universal impulse born out of loss, exile, the scattering of a community, the losses of the individuals that compose the community, and an effort to fight against the loss of communal and individual memory. And as such, they go back well before the Holocaust. The first example I'm showing you is something that was born out of the first genocide of the 20th century, the 1915 destruction of the Armenian communities in the Ottoman Empire. What you see here is the cover page and the last page of a monumental history of the Armenian community of Kayseri, a town in Asia Minor. It was published, as the little stamp on the last page shows, by the Association of Former Residents of Kayseri, formed in Cairo after World War I. in 1925, and it was published in 1937 under the edition of one local historian. But if you read the preface, you see that it's actually a collective effort. He acted as the editor. And it's a very interesting book. It goes on for two volumes, more than 2,000 pages, and includes many of the same elements that you would see in a Yisker book. It has, first of all, a record of the history of the community from antiquity all the way down to the cataclysm that engulfed it in 1915, and to stories of the survivors afterwards. It is a story of community activities, as seen in this portrait of the local teachers, clergy, and other local notables gathered on the eve of the genocide. You notice that every person is numbered and named. To more personal things like this record of a wedding just 5 years before it all fell apart. There are also records of notable individuals with portraits, with records of when they were born, what they did in their lives, and for those who survived, where they are currently living. So in many ways, this is sort of a precursor of what you have just seen. As a more direct example of a Yisker book, this is one that was published by the Association of Polish Jews in Argentina in 1949, so right after the Holocaust. It is already number 46 in a series of Yisker Bicher published by this group, aiming to memorialize the lost Jewish communities of Poland. And again, it goes beyond the personal to also record things like the synagogue of the community, which you see at top left. And I grabbed the one on the right from another Yisker book published in the 1970s, already in Hebrew and English rather than Yiddish. And you see a rather informal scene of a young man and his lady friends enjoying a drink in the late 30s. After World War II, of course, it wasn't only the survivors of the Shoah who had lost family and community. There were, by some estimates, as many as 10 million displaced people in Europe and overseas who had been displaced by the cataclysm of World War II. And there were some government efforts to document the memories that these people carried. A very interesting project that I think more historians, archivists, and others should be aware of is the Harvard Refugee Interview Project, which has since, in a gesture of political correctness, been renamed Harvard Emigre Interview Project. It sounds, an emigre sounds almost like a person who had a choice in the matter. But anyway, this was a project funded, began actually in 1949 with a pilot project and lasted until 1953. It was funded at the time with a huge grant, $1 million, by the U.S. Air Force. And the aim was to capture, to some extent, what the experience of life in the Soviet Union had been from 1917 to the end of World War II when these people moved. It was a bit like of a closed society, much as China was in the 50s and 60s, and the government was intensely curious to know how the society actually functioned. To this end, more than 2,000 Soviet refugees were interviewed in camps in Germany and also in the U.S. 1,000 of them were interviewed in depth in New York. These were more prominent community leaders. And all of this material was transcribed, mostly in English, some of it in Russian. And the transcriptions then were reproduced on mimeograph and bound. I believe there are 37 volumes in the first series and 24 volumes in the second. Huge things. And they sit in a basement in Harvard and are occasionally used by graduate students. And the original mimeographs are not in great shape. Luckily, someone had the wit to microfilm them. But this is, again, one of those examples of what was done. At the same time, other communities, for example, the millions of Germans, ethnic Germans who were displaced after the war from Eastern European countries, for example, the 500,000 who were expelled from the former Yugoslavia, started putting out their own community memorial books with many of the same functions. This is an example of one of them, produced relatively late in the game. I think it's the second in a series from this particular community. You can see the community was founded in 1763, and it disappeared in 1944-45, when the new communist authorities rounded up all 5,000-odd people in the community, put them in a camp. The village was renamed. The Lutheran church you see there was blown up. And Serbs from elsewhere in Serbia were resettled there. Here you see a family from the village. And again, a feature you also see in the Jiskerbücher, an accounting of where the people from the community now are. You can see that of the 5,000 odd, about 3,000 are in Austria and Germany. Mind you, these are not their native countries. These are the descendants of people who had been living in the place from which they had been expelled for, almost 150 years. And many are overseas. What is significant, if you look at the next to last figure, some 1,400 out of the 5,000 perished, almost all of them in the camps, either of beatings, of starvation, and of epidemics, mostly typhus. So it was a wrenching experience for these people as well. On the other end of Yugoslavia, on the Adriatic, some 350,000 Italians were likewise expelled. Many of them were living in camps as late as the 1960s. And they, too, produced a large number of these memorials to their lost communities, many of them now villages that have permanently fallen into ruin and have never been resettled. And scholars such as Pamela Bollinger, who published this book with Princeton University Press recently, started looking at these memorial books not merely as a recording of memory, but also as recording what kind of image of the lost community is being projected. All history and all memory has a point of view. And in this case, she started exploring, do these people remember their lost community as a purely Italian community, or do they remember their interactions, positive or otherwise, with their neighbors? What kind of vision is enshrined in these? So you can see that these things also serve a function for scholarship. In the last decade of the 20th century, although we've said never again, genocide once again reared its head in Europe, this time in Bosnia. And it was a wrenching experience in a country of 4 million people, the size of West Virginia in geographic area. More than half the population was forcibly displaced. Up to 200,000 were murdered. Many thousands passed through brutal camps. And more than 700 communities were pretty much permanently destroyed. And many of them in exile started putting together, again, memorial books, both in Bosnian and in foreign languages. If you look at the people who sponsored this particular book, which appeared during the last year of the war, you can see that there is a political group, a cultural society, a religious community board, and a charity association. So again, very much an equivalent of the Landsmannschaften. And if you look inside the book, you see that again, in sort of rudimentary fashion, it follows a very similar pattern. There's a history of the community, then there's a long list of those who are dead or missing, and a summary of their experiences. The first person, in case you can't read, went through a camp, then was used as a human shield during the fighting in Mostar, and finally was killed. His body was found, and so forth. There's also a section, which you can see on the right-hand side, dedicated to the loss of cultural and religious heritage, including the town's five mosques, which were systematically destroyed, the local archives, and Muslims have the same reverence for the Quran as the written word of God as Jews have for the Torah. So the loss of handwritten Qurans is counted as great a loss as the loss of building or other precious artifact. As the years have passed since the end of the war, it ended in 1995, more elaborate versions of these books still keep appearing. One of them is a memorial to the town of Zvornik, which is in eastern Bosnia on the Drina River. In the 1991 census, 48,000 of its inhabitants, roughly two-thirds of the population, were Bosnian Muslims. In 1995, just 4 years later, the UN High Commission for Refugees estimated there were no Muslims left in Zvornik. All 46 mosques in the town and its vicinity were destroyed, and all of the inhabitants of Muslim background were expelled or killed. Just this summer, a new mass grave was discovered with over 700 human remains in it on the outskirts of the town. The memorial book here, again, has exactly the kind of pictures you would see in the more developed Yeskerbücher, except the faces and the hairdos look appropriately more recent. On top is the girls' basketball team, volleyball team from Zvornik. On the bottom, a group of local residents. It also includes things like the hand-drawn maps with all the houses numbered and keyed to the text where the individuals lived. What's interesting, though, is that the Bosnian genocide happened exactly at the historical moment where the web was born in the early 1990s. And from the very beginning, websites sprang up. The earliest one I know of began in 93 or 94. It was called BosNet, Bosnian Network. And it was a way of sharing news both of the bigger world, you know, what's happening with news from Bosnia that's not being covered by the papers, also individuals, you know, scattered families searching for each other. These have developed into an electronic version of Yeskerbücher, but unlike the ones you just saw, these were born digital. These are not electronic versions of paper books, but things that were conceived as electronic objects. Again, they contain many of the elements that you are by now familiar with. The top says here, welcome to the website of Bosanski Novi. It's a small town in northwestern Bosnia. It says here, doživite više, live more. It has been a long time since I have seen my native land. I write you a letter, oh my old friend. And then below is a section on news and events. The one called Literatura is actually a very elaborate history of Bosanski Novi with reproductions of old engravings, historical documents, pictures of notable people, and of what happened during the cataclysm. Then there's a section called Fotografie, photographs, which is constantly being contributed to by the people who are members of this website, mostly members of the scattered community now living in many countries. And then there is an email address directory. And that's, I'm showing you the map. Bosanski Novi is at the top. The white area is the area that was ethnically cleansed by Serb forces, so Bosanski Novi fell in it. This is a detail from the email address directory, just the very beginning of it. You can see the first addresses include St. Louis, Missouri, Tromsø in Norway, Seattle, Washington, a small town in Switzerland, then there's Germany, Australia, and so forth. And one of the functions of this is also to bind the community. You saw at the front page that it also had a live email chat. But a big, big function of all of these websites is the memorial function. Again, just like Judaism, Islam places a great value on giving the dead a proper burial, on memorializing them. And in Bosnia, just as with the Holocaust, the big issue is that so many of the dead have yet to be found. And so this is from another community called Čarakovo. Čarakovo is a much smaller place, and it had the horrible distinction of having a very large portion of the community killed. At the peak of the killing, a group of men were lined up in front of the local mosque. The Muslim clergyman was wrapped in a prayer rug, doused with gasoline, and burned. And then 28 people were shot to death, and many of their bodies have yet to be found. This is an excerpt, and if you just look through it, these are all people with the same last name, same extended family, date of birth, their last known address, Nestao, means missing since, and you can see all the same date, except on the right top row you have a gentleman where it is mentioned that he wasn't missing in Čarakovo, but in Omarska, which was one of the more notorious concentration camps run by the Serb. And below him is a gentleman whose remains had been found and identified, exhumed, in 1998, 3 years after the war, and it gives the mass grave from which his remains were gathered. A number of people don't have photographs, and for them, they just put the Bosnian lily. And they do this irrespective of religion. So the town had some Catholic Bosnian Croat inhabitants who were killed there in there too, as is one of the Muslim, one of the Bosnian Serb residents of the town who protested against the killing of his neighbors and was killed as an example along with his wife. Here you have a whole family, grandmother at the bottom right, her son and her grandson in the pictures. Then there are the websites that, first of all, are very hard to find. How would you know that www.opal.ca is not about cars, but about the lost Muslim community of Bijeljina, a town in eastern Bosnia? This is a very highly developed site. It has an active chat. It has a little register on top showing the number of hits, which range up to 2,700. Has very elaborate subsections, recent news, then albums of various photographs. And it's interesting because the albums are organized almost archivally according to the donor. So the top left one is album from the legacy of the late departed Mustafa Grabčanović by the kindness of his son Faisal. And it is a large album, and it's a collection of old photographs of Bijeljina, showing not only the man's family, but also scenes of Bijeljina of old, including the only known collection of photographs of Bijeljina's Jewish community, which was destroyed in World War II. So this is how worlds meet. And then the second one is old pictures of Bielina from before World War II, all the way down to the bottom right, which documents the rebuilding of Bielina's mosque, which finally started 8 years after the end of the war in 2003. The problem with these websites, although they're a precious resource, and I became aware of them through my work for the War Crimes Tribunal, is that they are very ephemeral. Like all of these efforts, there's usually a small group of individuals involved in creating and maintaining them. They're usually refugees, usually very poor, and they have time. So they put this together. What happens is then they forget to pay their internet provider bill, their provider goes under or is bought up, and the site disappears. You see here one of the free sites, which has the disadvantage of ads in Swedish all around, which take away a bit from the dignity of the site. The problem that I would like to pose to the group here is, how do we preserve this memory? There is an internet archive, but most of these sites are built on layers. The archives technology preserves only the very top layer. Usually that means the picture albums are not included. Dynamic features such as the online chat are very hard to capture. So I was wondering if there isn't some means of enlisting people in archives programs or interested archivists in making a representative collection, at least, of these very evanescent electronic iskarbikar as well. So thank you very much, and I look forward to the discussion.
We do have some time for questions. I wonder if someone sitting by the light switch, the incredibly complex, technologically advanced light switch. Are there any questions? Okay. I actually had a...
Oh.
Joanne? I have to repeat the question. The question was, what are the copyright issues with the print-on-demand Yiskra books? Are they considered out of print, or do they just... what are the issues involved with that?
I'm actually trying to find that out myself, because I don't know. I don't know. Some of the Landsmannschaften are no longer in existence, so I don't know what happens to copyright matters if there's no one to sort of get permission from. Some of the active Landsmannschaften, especially the Pietrikov one, Ben Giladi has been working with the Jewish Gen, so he's been able to give them permission. But in terms of the range of memorial books, I don't know.
Okay. I'd like to add to that I've noted that in these... internet sites that arise from the Bosnian experience, that the material seems to crop up everywhere. This last site I showed gives very proper credit to where they got permission from. Notice that not the original object is shared, that remains a private archive, but their scans are shared. But then people everywhere snag images off the web, and most towns have 2, 3, 4 websites devoted to them, run by various groups of individuals, sometimes based in different countries. And I think part of that also shows the growing mentality of the web, which has subverted the very notion of authorship and copyright. Obviously, it's like jaywalking at midnight. Who can catch you and what can they do to you?
And I actually have here two copies of the reprints on demand, and I'm just looking at the front matter, and it says, copyright 2003, the New York Public Library and the National Yiddish Book Center. But I don't know if the Book Center Library actually went to 650 Landsmannschaften and got permission. I don't know. But it's listed here as the copyright holder, the library, and the Book Center.
Well, I had a question, and it's related to the original materials. You touched on it a little bit, and this goes both for Rosemary and Andres. Obviously, as archivists, we're most interested in the unique materials, the original documents. Have there been any efforts to bring the original materials that were used in the Yiskra books or in the Bosnian websites together into a new reconstructed communal archive, seeing as these community archives have been totally destroyed in most cases? If there's...
I don't know of any.
Well, you mentioned in the Holocaust Museum there are some of the realia from this book, the English version.
Oh, but you're talking about all the community's memorial books?
I'm particularly, you could take Piotrkov as an example, but the people who own the photographs and who drew the drawings and have written the manuscripts, are they still in possession of these individual documents, or are there any efforts to bring the actual original documents that were used for the Yiskra books together into a communal archive of some kind?
I just know about Piotrkov for one. Benjamin Mead, who was in the museum to do so.
Yeah. I haven't really gone into this systematically enough, but from the cases that I have examined, the problem is that almost all of these, the paper publications, I'm just talking with the Bosnian experience here, both the paper publications and the web publications are essentially ad hoc publishing efforts. So unlike a book published, say, by the Smithsonian Press, there isn't an archive that gathers this material. They're mostly personal materials owned by families who are very reluctant to let go of them because it's all they have left of their hometown. And so in a way, it's an ephemeral archive. It's brought together for the moment of creation of these particular publications, and then it vanishes again. And this is true even of efforts that are sponsored by fairly large groups. They tend not to hang on to them.
Okay, I see a question on the left here. The question is, that makes sense. The question is two parts, I guess. And that is, one, Andras, have you looked at any sites that perhaps could be labeled revisionist or sites that are not set up by the victims? And is there any movement towards some sort of consensus history on of these towns that have been destroyed?
Well, it's really sort of several questions in one. One is every group, the Serbs, the Croats, the Muslims, the others, all consider themselves victims first and foremost. And so, yes, there are Serb sites devoted to the sufferings of Serbs. Usually, there the effort is to try to blend together the sufferings of Serbs from World War II with the sufferings of Serbs in the recent war, in a way using the World War II suffering to justify what Serbs did to their neighbors 40, 50 years later. So in that sense, there's sort of an undercurrent of revisionism. There are also more straightforwardly revisionist sites arguing that the killings at Srebrenica never happened, that when you know, dozens of people were killed in Tuzla and Sarajevo by shells. Those weren't really Serb shells. Those were Muslims staging events in order to garner world sympathy. That kind of subtext. Also, lots and lots of websites lionizing some of the war crimes indictees. That is of course a study in itself, very much like Nazi or revisionist websites. At the same time, these other sites do not primarily serve a function, I think, of advertising to the world what have we suffered. Usually they are small communities trying to serve several purposes. Most of them are the purposes that were served by Yisker books, namely one is to simply make a record of who was in that community, who is missing, who has been found dead, and so forth. Secondly, because these are active efforts, they serve as a means of binding the community, which is now scattered, together in some fashion. And now that returns have begun, they also serve as a way of mobilizing aid. So there's on these websites, right alongside the lists of the missing and dead, there are fundraisers for rebuilding the local school, for rebuilding the local mosque, and so forth. What was very interesting to me is, for example, in this case of Charakovo, how they made a big effort to be ecumenical about it, how they did mention the ones sort of righteous Serb family that tried to resist the ethnic cleansing and memorialize them, and to include the small Croat minority in the village that was also persecuted. So in that sense, they're not, proclaiming an exclusive or vengeful vision of the past necessarily. I think the big fear is that it will be forgotten. And so it's a fight to remember. So in that sense, it is the memorial in the sense of making sure that these things do not become non-existent.
Okay, in the back left, that would be you. Yeah. The question is, what types of institutions would do exist that could take in this material as an art, in the sense of archives, on a national level within Bosnia or even with outside of Bosnia?
Well, part of the peace settlement that ended the Bosnian War in 1995 is a constitution that deliberately weakens the central national institutions and devolves power to local ethnically based governmental entities. The latter have all the resources, all the money, and unfortunately are dominated by ethnic political agendas. So they have no interest in promoting a unified national version. On the national level, national institutions have been weakened to the degree that, for example, the National Archives right now is a back room staffed by occasional volunteers, so it has no resources to do anything. On a broader level, I'm not aware of anyone who is systematically archiving anything of this nature. It wouldn't take tremendous resources. After all, it's internet. You need, server storage, which is trivial. You need someone with the technical knowledge to archive a dynamic and evolving site. And you need somebody who knows the language. Well, even the latter is not a rare thing. St. Louis, Missouri alone has 50,000 Bosnian refugees. At least some of them, I would hope, might be interested in careers in archives, or many of them have technological interests. So I would see any future of this happening outside of Bosnia, because in Bosnia, I don't. They haven't yet had anything approaching a Truth and Justice Commission or some sort of attempt to develop a unified narrative.
Okay, in the very back. On the. The question is, why were the Yisker books, the reprinted print-on-demand Yisker books, reprinted without the necrology?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because in the case of Pietrikov, there's two versions. And Ben Giladi said that he sort of believes there's two different readers. The one reader is the Pietrikover and his or her descendants, for whom the names are very important as family records. And then there's this other reader who is interested in the town in its historical ways, not so much as a personal family matter. So that's why you have the necrology in one and not the other. And of course, like, that also points to the evolving genre and who the future reader is going to be. It was surprising to me when I found out that there was two versions of the Pietrikover, A Tale of One City, and I only found out when I went to interview a second-generation Pietrikover with, I brought my copy, and Alex had his copy on the coffee table, and then I saw the copies were different. So even when I interviewed Ben Giladi, and I interviewed him at length, he sort of never told me there was two versions, because I was the other kind of reader, not a Pietrikover.
The comment was essentially that the there's room for perhaps collaboration or a model of the Library of Congress's work to archive Congress and documents put on the web regarding 9/11, et cetera, and that they're dealing with a lot of these issues, as are we as archivists, how to truly archive a web page.
No, I mean, the main problem is that the Internet Archive probably as a means of economizing does not go below the surface. And so if the site is really deep and multi-layered, even the most primitive sites, I mean, like the one with the necrology that I showed you, are composed actually of two layers. There's one with the text and one with the images. And if you look at the Internet Archive, archived version of it, all you get is the text.
The question is, how do you find these sites, Andras?
Several ways. One is frequent Googling. I mean, like the one I showed, opel.ca, simply because the name of the town kept recurring. Sometimes you find it through the web pointers. You know, there's links from other sites, and they bring you surprises. And finally, through personal networking, I know of other people who are involved in this kind of thing. There are also aggregation sites, sites that list local hometown web pages. And, you know, the problem is most of these sites aren't kept up, so half of the links won't work anymore, but the ones that do, you gather. So it's a very hard thing, and I don't think it would be possible even to have an exhaustive register of them, especially since many of them lead such a mayfly existence. They're up for 3 months, 6 months, and then the refugee goes home, you know, forgets to pay his bill, and it's gone.
Any other questions? Molly?
Has there been an attempt to help if they are dealing with digital files in the first place?
The question is, have you had made any effort to contact the people who are making these sites? And if so, have you given them any made any suggestions as to how they could, A, archive the original materials, or B, if they're born digital, how to back them up, et cetera?
My communications with some of these people were mainly I was trying to find the answer to specific questions. In the communications, I would always try to impress upon them what valuable stuff they had and that they should try to preserve it. But, you know, I can't really tell them to, you know, please back up your computer.
I need to back up my computer. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thanks a lot, and thank you.
Thank you.